Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black. Have you ever thought about how friendships begin? Why do some friendships last a lifetime and others are much shorter? Are women's friendships different than men's? Do women friends talk more and about more personal things than men do? And how do you define a close friend? Those are among the questions we're exploring right now with our guest, psychotherapist Diane Barth, author of I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives.
Welcome to the show, Diane. We are so excited to be talking to you because this is one of the most interesting topics, especially I know for my mom and I, as a two-generational show, we both have kind of different ideas about what exactly women's friendships are and what they involve. And yeah, things have changed so much with social media. So we're really looking forward to diving into this with you. What made you decide to write the book?
Well, before I do tell you, thank you for having me. But also, I really would like to interview the two of you. So
go ahead.
Go for it.
We'll turn this around.
Exactly. That sounds great.
I decided to write the book. I was having coffee with a friend, and I mean, you've already hit on about six of the points of the book, but we were talking about how our friendships had changed over the years. We had gotten together, as we do, once every 6 or 8 or 9 months, and we were chatting away, as we do every time we get together, and talking about how our friendship had changed over the years, and also how both of us were aware that the nature of our friendships with other women had changed over the years. And she asked me if that was something that I was familiar with. I said, sure. And with my clients in therapy, all the time I'm hearing discussions about different kinds of issues with friendships. And she said, you know, I think you should write about that. And that was the beginning of the book.
Well, I think it's a great topic, and I'm wondering if you can share some of the issues that your clients bring up in psychotherapy about friendships and the challenges that they present.
Sure, but the thing was that when I started interviewing people, the issues that my clients brought up were the same issues that women all over the country and all over the world shared with me. I interviewed close to 200 women, and everybody, I mean, there were lots of different stories and different issues, but things like, on the one hand, the tremendous support that women get from one another, and on the other hand, the tremendous pain we can cause one another. So betrayal was one thing, ghosting was another thing. People, you know, you thought, one woman was telling me about this woman she had been very close to, and suddenly she disappeared. And there was she called her, she texted her, she emailed her. She said the one thing she didn't do was go to her house and knock on her door, because she just felt like the message was clear that she wasn't interested in continuing the friendship. But I heard stories like that, of a lot of different kinds of stories of women breaking each other's hearts. So there were wonderful, beautiful, uplifting stories, and then also very sad stories.
What do you think the greatest joys and heartbreaks are that you've personally observed in relationships, since that's the tagline of your book?
Sure. I think the greatest joy is actually the name of the book, which is the feeling of being that somebody knows how you feel. And actually, the funny thing about that is that a lot of people don't like it when you say, I know how you feel, because they say you couldn't possibly know how I
right.
feel.
Uh-huh. Right.
But I think the greatest joy is feeling validated or affirmed. So somebody doesn't have to say, I know how you feel. They can just be nodding their head and you know that they get what you're experiencing.
A little more subtle than saying it.
Exactly.
It's kind of more of a response that they want, I guess. I kind of get that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And women do that really well. And that's, I think, one of the great joys. There was my research was very informal. It was anecdotal. But there's some formal research that says that one of the things we look for in friendships is support and trust. And so those are really, really important joys in a friendship. On the other hand, some of the real heartbreaks come when trust is broken or when support is taken away. One woman told me about a friend who had been It really had been one of her best supports and had been her close friend since they were young. And at a certain point, she got ill. She got Lyme disease, which I don't know where you all are, but do you have
in
Lyme
San Francisco?
Oh, okay. So that's right.
There's some Lyme disease a little bit north.
There are ticks around there. Yeah.
Okay. We have it really bad up here in the Northeast, and so she got Lyme disease, and her friend disappeared on her. She needed somebody just to sort of hang out with her. She was feeling really terrible, and this really close friend disappeared, and. And then another friend who was not somebody she was particularly close to sort of stepped into the breach and was there for her the whole time she was ill, would come and just sit with her. They'd read together, each read separately, or her friend would read while she slept. And it was heartwarming, but also heartbreaking because she didn't know what had happened to the other friend. When she got healthy, and she started to process some of the feelings, and she was not just heartbroken, but also angry. She actually addressed it with the other woman, and the other woman said, with great shame, that she was really, really sorry. She had been such a bad friend, but that she couldn't stand to see this woman in such a state of helplessness. It just had not been something she could tolerate. So the two of them took them a while to process it and to sort of work it through. But again, I think when friendships work is when we're able to actually find a way to manage each other's frailties and tolerate the fact that we are certainly not perfect and we don't get everything about each other and we can't give everything to each other.
Thinking about this topic, it occurs to me that you don't really know the point at which a friendship begins. It's just one of those things that sort of evolves, and all of a sudden you realize, oh, that's my friend, that's a good friend. But there's not a particular time on the clock when you say, okay, now it's time to begin a friendship.
That is very interesting and very true, although I did hear stories about women who, you know, sort of were a perfect match, sort of like falling madly in love with somebody at first sight. But even those stories were, somebody was telling me more about what had happened, they were more nuanced, more complicated. I also heard stories about women who disliked each other on sight, who really were not interested in being friends at all. And one of the classic ones was two women who were now in their 40s, who were very, very good friends, but at a distance. I mean, their lives had moved on so that they were each in different parts of the country. But they had met in college. They had disliked each other intensely in college. One thought the other one was sort of arrogant and snobby, and the second one thought the first one was loud and boisterous and just too noisy without any class. And they were stuck in their dorm one night, and nobody else was in the dorm. And they went out for they both, after they had done whatever they were doing, had gone down to the common room and run into each other. And at that point, there was nobody else around, so they figured they would talk to each other, and they talked for a little while, and then they decided they both wanted to go out, so they went out for a beer together. And that was the beginning of what turned out to be an extremely close friendship. But you're right, it certainly wasn't their plan, and it would not have been something that either one of them would have said was going to happen.
Yeah.
I want to take it back to something you just mentioned in the question before and make it a little bit personal here, because it really struck a chord with me when you talked about a friend ghosting on you. And I had a great friend, my very best friend from high school. She and I maintained our friendship over 10 years, and I thought everything was good. I would vent to her about my relationship, which was very, very unhealthy. And all of a sudden, she just ghosted on me. Wow. And I never really understood why. And it took a few months. She never responded to my texts asking what's going on. And I found out through a friend of a friend that she was really unsupportive of my relationship and just didn't want to see me get involved in these unhealthy patterns anymore. So what would the first step be to me trying to get this friend back?
Well, first of all, you'll have to accept that it might not happen. But second of all, that's actually a really wonderful story because you know that she didn't ghost you for some crazy or unknown reason. She cared about you and she couldn't tolerate hearing about you being in these bad relationships, right?
But isn't so much of being a friend agreeing to put up with that and listen to the person's stories and not being judgmental?
You know, that's our ideal fantasy of what a friend is about. But in fact, I've heard this story many times in many different ways. And sometimes it's really hard to sit and listen to a friend keep doing something unhealthy and disturbing. And some women told me about sort of standing up to the friend and saying, listen, this is not good for you. I mean, including not just relationships, although that's often one of the issues, but patterns of behavior with their children or with their family, or even eating and drugs and alcohol problems. So at a certain point, sometimes friends say, I can't listen to you anymore.
Right.
Your friend couldn't say it, but it sounds like it wasn't that she didn't care about you. It was that she cared too much. And so if you were going to try to reconnect, that's probably where you should start, that she cared that you were doing something that was just so destructive or at least it sounded bad to her that she couldn't listen.
Right. Well, you know, it hurt like the end of a relationship, honestly. You know, it was just as hurtful.
Sure. And, you know, and the other side of that coin is one of the things that I heard from so many women is that the problem with our image of friendships, that friends stand behind us through thick and thin, is that we don't really make space for the fact that friends can really, really disagree about something. Women have a lot of troubles. Although I think men do too, but sometimes men can be more direct about it. But we don't like for there to be conflict. And so sometimes we don't have the tools for addressing something directly and saying, look, this is not good for you and it's not good for me to listen to you doing this and I just can't be there anymore.
Tell us more about how women's friendships differ from those of men and the expectations that women have and how they're different from those of men.
Well, I'll start with that I heard over and over again people talking about differences, but I also heard over and over again some of the differences sort of disproved. So, again, I didn't do any scientific kind of research, but it was fascinating. So one of the things that early in the research, my husband is a much more outgoing person than I am. So we would be at a dinner party and my husband would say, oh, Diane's writing a book about women's friendships. And the men would all start talking. And one of the things that one of the men said early in the process was that he said it very sweetly and very longingly that he wished that he had had the ability to have the kinds of friendships that women have. He said, "Don't get me wrong, I have friends, but we don't have the emotional connection that you women have." And it was really interesting and a great sort of precursor to what was to come, which was everybody at the table jumped in. So some of the women said, yeah, my friends are my lifeline. And others said, you know, that's a bunch of malarkey. Women don't have all these wonderful friends either. I can tell you, you know, all these stories about nasty breakups with friends or one of the women said, I don't have those kinds of close friends. And the man's wife said, you know, if you would make a phone call once in a while, you'd have those kinds of connections. But then other men, not at that table that night, but other men at other times have told me about having these very, very intense connected feelings with their friends where they talk about feelings and they talk about, they don't talk about them necessarily in exactly the same language that women talk about them, but where they do talk about feelings and they provide support for each other and they provide all kinds of caring community. So I'm not a good person to say what are the differences, because it seemed to me that there's much more crossover than we give space for. One last thing I'll say about that. Women tend to think that when we are friends with somebody through an activity, that that's not being friends, that somehow we're supposed to be talking about personal stuff. But what I heard over and over again also was that making friends through activities both can lead to more emotional connection, but it can also be a friendship in itself. So women, one young woman who had just graduated from college, who was very, she spoke something that many of the women I talked to said, that she missed her friends from college terribly. And she said, you know, women you just can't be close to people the same way once you're out in the work world. She started thinking about what she had done to get connected to her friends in college, and she said, well, a lot of it was around activities. So she started joining different meetup groups and to do activities, some of them she had never done before, some she had done in college. She started pole dancing, joined the pole dancing community. But she started to make connections that were very meaningful, but some of them, actually she said a lot of them, were not the close kinds of connections she had had in college. They were people she did things with. She enjoyed doing them. They were nice activities, but she didn't bare her soul to anybody.
So I'm thinking about social media and how many of us have so many hundreds or thousands of friends, but they're not necessarily our real friends. So how has social media changed our friendships?
Well, actually, I think that what social media has done, and I'm actually taking this from Deborah Tannen, who's done a lot of research, formal kind of research on these relationships. But I think that one of the things that social media has done is that it has provided us with, it's exaggerated a lot of the stuff that was already there. It hasn't really made something happen that wasn't already a possibility, but it's enhanced or exaggerated things. So, for example, if you've got FOMO, if you're afraid of being left out, and you look on Facebook and you see these friends doing things that you weren't invited to do, your FOMO is going to be worse, right?
Right.
If you, in the old days, you didn't have to look at
it. It can make you get jealous more easily. Seriously.
Exactly.
You know, even if a friend posts a birthday message for one friend and not for you. I mean, I'm using that as an example. That hasn't personally happened to me, but I'm just thinking, what if? Yeah, no, it would make you feel not so good about yourself.
Yep. So that one of the things that I think that parents have to teach their kids and that we all have to really pay attention to is, first of all, what we do share on social media, and second of all, that we take what we see on social media with a grain of salt, that we try not to take it so personally. If somebody posts, you know, birthday greetings on one person's Facebook page and not on yours, or if somebody looks like they're having a wonderful time and a wonderful life, or somebody has 700 million friends and you've only got 20. You know?
Right, yeah.
But, that it's really important to not take that as the reality of your life or their life.
Right, but you know, I think in somebody like my mom's generation, she said, and I know, Mom, you'll probably agree with me here, that having Facebook has been a wonderful resource for you to reconnect with a lot of your friends from your past, and it's
exactly.
Not in a way that's made you more jealous of them if they've posted that they're somewhere with their family, but it's actually a good thing. You actually get to see where they're at in their lives, and it maybe is different generationally.
Right. I think it's been a wonderful thing for my generation. I mean, I'm 61, and it's been wonderful to reconnect with people that I knew in elementary school and to see the challenges in their lives and just to be able to give a word or a sentence of support and say, hey, I'm sorry you're parent died, or I'm sorry your husband is ill. You know, it's been really nice.
Yep.
And that support seems genuine too. That's the thing. It's like from an older generation, I feel like it's more that people go online to Facebook because they want to actually support one another rather than that they kind of want to see what everyone else is up to and have that FOMO.
Yeah.
Well, and you just put your finger on one of the differences in developmental stages of friendships. I think that for many women, by the time they're in your mom's and my generation, that there's less competition, less jealousy and envy. I mean, it does still exist, but there's also genuine desire to connect. And for me too, the social media has been an incredible thing.
Is there a certain number of friends that you think the average woman has or wants to have? I mean, can you break it down in numbers?
That is so interesting. I can't. I don't remember seeing a statistic for that. And I certainly don't know from my own, my own informal research. But I do know that the statistics are that we have less friends as we get older. That, that it sort of peaks around the college and just post-college age. And then as we get older, whether or not we start families, whether or not we have a career, the number of friends begins to diminish. I can't put a number on there.
And don't we often define close friends differently? Don't each of us have a different expectation of what a close friend is and what we want from that friend?
Yes, I think that absolutely. And I think, again, some of that changes as we go through the different stages of life. I talked to women who were in their 40s who wanted close friends who would just go to the school and pick up their sick kid while they were at work. that was a close friend at that point. Somebody who just understood what they were struggling with. And that's another place where I know how you feel comes in. It's like, it's more a given I'm here with you. I know what you're struggling with, and I'll step in at this time. And as we get older, we have different needs for our close friends. So things change when we're either dealing with a parent's illness or a child's illness or a spouse's illness. When we deal with death and loss, the whole idea of what a friend is it changes also.
And going along with that, how should you approach a friend if they've gone through a recent death, or if they're depressed, or if they're going through a rough time, if they're pushing us away?
Yeah, that's really hard. And what I say all through the book, and this goes back to your mom's question, that the idea that is that there are a lot of different ways to, there are a lot of different kinds of definitions of friends, and there are a lot of different ways to deal with friends. So I think the most important thing is not to take it personally when they push us away. But the next most important thing is to be able to try to understand what they actually need. So some people, when they push you away, don't really want you to go away. And so you have to keep sort of pushing back. And this goes back to your friend also, that you want them to know that you care. It's not always easy to explain it when somebody, and you weren't doing this, but when somebody's pushing you away. One of the things I heard from one woman was that she tends to get depressed, and that she had a number of friends who got really mad at her because when she's depressed, she withdraws and she doesn't answer any phone calls or texts or emails or anything. And some friends said to her, "You could at least let me know that you got my message or that you're okay." But one woman just texted her maybe once a week and said, "Just want to let you know I'm thinking about you and I love you and I hope you're feeling better." And she didn't respond. She wasn't able to respond until maybe a few months later. She finally was feeling better and got in touch with the friend. But she felt that friend had really, she had been a friend. She had not demanded that this woman who was depressed and not able to give anything respond in any particular way, but she let her know that she was thinking about her.
You know, our show is called Nobody Told Me, and we always like to ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? What's the thing that you have learned from doing this research on women's friendships and hearing women talk in your psychotherapy practice over the years about friendships. What's that nobody told me lesson that you've had?
Oh, that is a great question. I would say that for me, the nobody told me question was that I don't have to have friends who I go away with for a weekend because I'm not a I'm not a go away with girls kind of woman. But that's not the only definition of friendship that I in fact have many really wonderful friends, and they come in all sizes and shapes and colors and backgrounds and with all kinds of different connectedness. Mm-hmm. But they are all friends. And I think I did not realize that in the same way. And I don't think anybody had ever said that to me before I started doing the research for this book.
Well, I totally agree with you.
I completely agree as well.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Where can people find your book?
It's anywhere that books are being sold. So your local independent bookstore or big bookstores or online. They can also go to my website, which is dianebarth.net, and I've got links to a few different places where you can buy them online.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Diane, for joining us. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
And the name of the book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. We highly recommend it. We've really enjoyed talking to you, Diane, and we hope we get to speak more with you soon because there's literally a million more things we would love to talk to you about.
Exactly.
Well, thank you both. And you have a wonderful podcast, so thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Well, we look forward to talking with you soon. You've been listening to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black. Thank you for joining us.